I do talk about this in the book. It is the concept of like the true and the false self. So a big part of this, like working out this trauma for me, was this realization that I, my authentic essence, like my, who I really was, had not like come forward into expression in my life. So I kind of had like lived this life that all of a sudden I felt like wasn't mine. I've worked I've worked it out more now, but in at that moment it had felt like I had lived this lie, which felt traumatic to me, you know, like I don't feel like I made any decisions out of like my own dynamic vitality, like my life, you know, the vitality of my life. Like, I don't feel like that was the driving force of my decisions. It was more about like social acceptance or trying to make this person proud, or like these attachment issues that I was trying to hold, you know what I mean? So like, yes, all of your life decisions kind of come into question, you know, like, why did I choose this job? Why did I marry this person? You know what I mean?
Welcome to the Rethinking Christianity podcast, a home to conversations focused on rethinking, challenging, and engaging with Christian thought. You can visit us on Instagram and Facebook at Rethinking Christianity Podcast. I'm your host, Blake Fine, and thank you for tuning in to today's episode. On today's episode of Rethinking Christianity, we have Heather Hamilton, who is the author of the book, Returning to Eden, A Field Guide for the Spiritual Journey. Super excited for her to be on and talk with us today about this title and some of her spiritual experience and what she's working through. This is, you know, I've been able to read some of the chapters in the book, and it's really compelling and interesting. So I'm really excited to talk with you today. And what's the official release date for it?
So the book comes out on February 22nd, 2023, obviously. So yeah, I'm not sure when this episode will release, but yeah, it'll be out soon.
We're
gonna
try and have it out before then, so people
get
an idea. So cool. So about yourself, we want to get into that a little bit. So what was your journey of faith? So this book is about the spiritual journey. So I want to hear a little bit about yours. Where did that begin? And was it, I guess, the traditional route of faith, or like, how did all that begin? Where was your Christian upbringing or religious upbringing?
Yeah. So I've lived, in the Bible Belt my whole life. We moved around a little bit, but I was first introduced to, besides like just kind of going, our family going on like Christmas and Easter kind of thing. My first introduction was like through Awana's, if you've ever heard of that, when I was like 6 or 7 years old. So we had some neighbors who were actually, they became missionaries, but they were really involved at this church, invited us to Awana's. And, you know, I got in there and was like, oh my gosh, I'm good at memorizing verses and I get all these awards and we play games. And, you know, it's like, I love it. So that was our first involvement. And then from there, like as a child, if you're not in the Bible Belt, you probably are not familiar with this. But like, if you are, sometimes you'll be driving around and there's like a 15 passenger van that's like, follow this bus to VBS kind of thing. So I like the church bus would like come and pick me up on Sunday mornings. And, you know, I loved church. So we moved around, quite a bit when I was a kid, and it was always like, okay, where's my church friends? You know, like, got to find a youth group, that kind of thing. So I don't think it was like an out of the ordinary experience, but it wasn't like my family was dragging me to church. That wasn't my experience. Like, I loved it. And like, it was my own, you know, this is where I want to be. And when we would move, it was like, no, I don't like this place. Let's go try the other place. My friends are at this place kind of thing. So, it was my own initiative that I've always been drawn to that environment. So I was like saved when I was 7, as a child. And then through youth group, it was like, you know, rededicating. And, you know, when I was 12 years old, it was like, you know, who's going to be a missionary? And I'm like, it'll be me, you know, like somebody's got to do it. So I'll do it kind of thing. So was just very involved like my whole life. And Then I met my husband, like, through the church that we were both going to. He, you know, is a musician, so he was like involved and on staff in the music ministry, and eventually became the music director of this big mega church. And it was like, this was like our whole life. Okay. So I'm sure that you understand this, but yes. It was like the whole ecosystem was evangelical Christianity, you know? Yes. So yeah, that we were just completely and utterly tethered. And like the whole deconstruction thing that I'm like, you know, aware of now, like I would say that that was my journey. And, but it wasn't like I was like reading and asking questions and like looking to do that. That's not how it started for me. It was like, this was not even like in my awareness that this was even happening, or like a movement or whatever you would call it. So it started with, and we can get into this, it was like a true, like, everything's going great and the bottom fell out and I basically like fell into a black hole and had this crazy experience and came out and was like, this doesn't make sense anymore. Okay. My lived experience is not like in line with my doctrine, I guess.
Hmm. Gotcha. So what, okay. I kind of want to hear about that. So what was, if you're okay with sharing that.
Yeah. So, okay, cool. I share a little bit about this in the book. But it was about 4 years ago. And we had just had like our third child. Like I said, my husband was the music director. We were super involved, had like, you know, in the church and like had started this like ministry for, you know, really targeted at like young adults kind of thing. And like, just loved it. Like, I still like miss it. It was, that ministry isn't going on anymore, but it was amazing anyway. But I, sort of just abruptly in my personal life had like some major revelations about myself and my life and all these things that had been like nebulous memories or weird experience, like that hadn't made sense, suddenly came into like crisp focus, like putting on glasses for the first time and realizing like, oh, this has all been here the whole time, but I just have had like extremely blurry vision. I couldn't see it. So anyways, these personal revelations basically like spiraled me into like what would conventionally be called like a nervous breakdown. Like it just in a matter of like days was like experiencing like just back to back panic attacks, which I know are like a lot of people experience that, but it was like successive kind of things. Like there was no getting a handle on it. And I just like descended very quickly into this. I had like the cognitive recognition of like, I'm not okay. This is not going to end well. And I cannot like get a hold of myself kind of thing. And also, you know, I had been in therapy for like 15 years, talk therapy kind of thing. And, but this was all like erupt, and I was not aware that there were like any other resources beyond like talk therapy to like help me. And so I was kind of in this spot where it was like, I've already done all the talk therapy that, that I can do. And clearly I'm in this hellish place right now. So that's not going to work. Like, I was just like totally unaware that there was like help. So that I think added to like the panic of like, I'm really not okay. I don't think that I'm not aware of anything else that could help me get out of this space. Anyway, so it was just like a very intense psychological descent into, I can't live like this kind of thing, you know, and I have three kids and it wasn't like, I'm trying to like summarize it. It's like this ineffable experience. It's kind of hard to put into words, but I basically ended up in this psychological place that I would call hell. Like, and I'm not trying to like say it as like, it was hell, you know, I'm not using it as a metaphor. It was like, this is what this is. Like I felt completely swallowed by the belly of the beast psychologically. And,
feels like there's, you know, no escape.
There was no escape. Like it felt like being untethered out in space And it was like, no, you know, like crying out for God for help kind of thing. And there, it was just this realization of like, nobody's coming to help you. And whatever like psychological thing I had had in my head where it was like, you know, you kind of picture yourself in these like desperate situations, you know, like what would I do or how would I feel if I was in this situation or that situation? And you kind of think like God would come rescue me in that moment. I don't know if this is, it was, this was so much like a conscious thing, but it, I, this experience was like, nobody's coming to get you kind of thing. And that was really devastating for me to kind of confront the fact that it's like my picture of God that I've had for my whole life is not accurate. Like whatever I pictured was going to happen in these dark and desperate moments is not happening. And it was a very like solitary, why have you forsaken me kind of thing.
Yeah.
So this moment kind of happened and the experience sort of climaxed. This one night when I was experiencing what I just explained, it was probably about like 1 a.m. in the morning. And because of all the panic and all this stuff, like I was trying not to like bother my husband because I had like kept him awake all week, you know, it was like we were all sleep deprived and like not sure when this was going to end. Anyways, but so I kind of came to a moment where I was like, I need help. I need you to call 911. That's, I don't know where we're going from here kind of thing. So he does. And, when we opened the door, the ambulance was there, the emergency response team, the person who started speaking, I immediately like recognized as a transgender person. And we live in like, you know, I'm in this evangelical kind of conservative world. This was not the, I wasn't used to like encountering transgender people. I'm not sure now, like how many people identify as that, like in this area, but it was just like a shocking, not what I was expecting. And I felt this fear, like, I don't know if I can trust you. And I'm the Christian who's supposed to be helping you and enlightening, you know what I mean? And like, it wasn't this thing that I was conscious of that I felt this way until this moment. And it was like, you know, even in our church, like we had a lot of, you know, diverse people and people all across like the LGBT spectrum. And it was like tolerant and respectful and kind, and even like people who are my friends, but I was just confronting this thing of like, I'm supposed to be helping you. It's not supposed to be the other way around. And it felt like this, I don't know, good Samaritan thing where all of a sudden I was like the tables were turned. And anyways, as she started speaking and like help, it was suddenly like this ineffable presence coming off of her that I like recognized as Christ, which was like, okay, you know, like this is, I don't know what's happening here. I know that this person is like the only person on the planet that can see me like in all of my distress and mess and like meet me there. And it was like that personal of like an exchange. And anyway, she was able to like put me at ease. And I don't know, it was just like this moment where like time fell away. It felt like this bubble of eternity or something where I'm like talking to Jesus in this unexpected body. And the I was also kind of aware of the paradoxical nature of this thing where it's like, I'm the church person. I'm the Christian who's supposed to have these answers. You're the person that I'm supposed to be helping or wanting to save or whatever. And like, but it's like Jesus speaking to me through this body. So it was like, everything kind of just went up in the air in terms of like my orientation and worldview and blah, blah, blah. Anyway, so what followed that was like months of like trauma therapy, which it was this therapy called EMDR, which was amazing for me and I didn't know existed before this. But yeah, I was kind of able to like do a lot of internal work on myself. And then so like corresponding with that work that I was doing and the experiences that I was having, which the whole thing that I just explained, I later came to like define as a mystical experience. It was like this real encounter with God where I was like, I'm 32 years old and I feel like this was my conversion to something real. Yeah. So what was the last 25 years of my life about, you know?
Yes. Yeah.
So where I was kind of going like, oh, I thought I had like the quote truth when I was 7 and I was just tasked with like bestowing that on other people. And suddenly I was like, I don't know anything other than like the experience that I just had was real. And I think that this experience, that descent into the psychological hell was like the belly of the whale. Like I was kind of aware like, oh no, I think that this is what the story was talking about. I don't think Jonah literally got swallowed by a whale. But I'm just now coming into that realization now that I have like this parallel experience that I can only like kind of describe through metaphor, where I'd be like, I felt like I was in hell. I felt like I got swallowed by a whale, you know?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And it's always interesting for me to hear different places that different people find themselves at the beginning of like, I guess you could use the language of deconstruction or re-experiencing or whatever. And so, wow, I, you know, I've never heard someone have that kind of experience and that lead them into a place of like questioning their belief system. So, so when did you begin to kind of, I guess, you know, you find this place where you're like, okay, I don't know anything. And for me, you know, I find myself in that place here and there, like, you know, I'll be trying to resolve a question I have or a thought that I have, and then I find myself, I'm like, okay, I don't know the answer to this. Where were you at when you were able to begin to like not necessarily resolve those things, but begin to come up with a pathway for your spiritual journey?
Yeah. So I think in that experience, something that that became very apparent to me, a piece that had been missing like in my evangelical Christianity upbringing, and I do talk about this in the book, it is the concept of like the true and the false self. So a big part of this, like working out this trauma for me, was this realization that my authentic essence, like who I really was, had not like come forward into expression in my life. So I kind of had like lived this life that all of a sudden I felt like wasn't mine. I've worked it out more now, but at that moment, it had felt like I had lived this lie, which felt traumatic to me, you know, like I don't feel like I, made any decisions out of like my own dynamic vital, like my life, you know, the vitality of my life. Like, I don't feel like that was the driving force of my decisions. It was more about like social acceptance or trying to make this person proud or like these attachment issues that I was trying to hold, you know what I mean? So like yes, all of your life decisions kind of come into question, you know, like, why did I choose this job? Why did I marry this person? You know what I mean? Like all of
it. That's scary. Just
like, oh yeah. You
because
know?
Like if you construct your whole life on the on a basis of like this particular belief system, when that,
yes,
even if it's not like a complete just pull of the rug out from under you, even if it's just the slightest thing, you know, especially in the evangelical spaces, like even questioning a little thing is just too much. And so I feel like a lot of people wrestle with that. And it is also interesting, you talk about Awanas as a part of your beginning. You know, Awanas is, if you don't know what Awanas is, you kind of talk through it, but you start that at a pretty young age. I mean, I think they have it down to like kindergarten or pre-K. And so if you're, and I don't like the use to the word like brainwash or anything like that, but if you're beginning that place at such a young age, and that is your whole system of all the decisions you make through like at 18 to 25 or whatever, that can be very traumatic when you're like realizing maybe you don't believe those things anymore, and it completely changes your like frame of working in your life. So yeah, a lot of people I think experience that.
Yeah. Well, and so what I kind of understood, I brought a little prop, I hope you don't mind, but I do this diagram of like, there's a chapter in the book called The Anatomy of a Seed.
It's chapter 3, right?
Yes. Chapter 3.
Got it.
And basically what I explain in there is that the gospel kind of parallels to this, my new understanding through my own experience paralleled to this. And it's basically like you have a tree, which I, you know, kind of parallel to like the tree of life in the garden. And what grows on a tree are these seeds. Okay. Which are actually like embryos whose destiny is like to become a whole other tree. But in order to like actually fulfill that destiny, the embryo has to be an outer shell that grows over the top of it that eventually is going to fall off the tree. And this is absolutely essential, like for the embryo inside to like take the journey through like the brutal elements of nature, you know, and like detach from its source and fulfill its own destiny of becoming a tree. So basically how I, looking at my own life, like I just described, like I wasn't living out my authentic self. Like the vitality of my life was still this embryo that had never come forth. But also I realized like all my coping mechanisms, this false self, as I call it, like in the book, was absolutely essential, you know, like, and so to me that like paralleled to original sin, like the state of sin was this, where, you know, who you are and why you're here and the things that you love and, you know, your imago Dei is this embryo inside of here, but it has to form this shell as a vehicle to like get you into life. Okay. Because I was like, nature is not like, you know, everybody just make it here kind of thing. So anyways, we all do this. And so there was sort of like, there was like shame and guilt for ways that I had like, you know, hurt other people or treated my husband or treated my kids or whatever through these coping mechanisms, you know? But there was also this awareness of like, I wasn't aware of that this was like my condition. Okay. With that, I was still in the shell. So it was this recognition of the original goodness inside, you know, there's the embryo, my true self, and also the necessary, like St. Julian of Norwich says, like, it's necessary that there should be sin, but all should be well. And she says, first the fall and then the recovery of the fall, and both are the mercy of God. And I think what she means is like, this is a natural process. So, you know, in the church, it's a very dualistic thing, you know, like we want to avoid sin at all cost, which basically just means like we've got our, whatever we label as bad behavior
in our rankings.
That we then just like try to repress or whatever, but we're actually all just acting out of like this false self until we wake up and realize like, oh, I'm still in the shell. And this now has to like bury itself in the ground, crack open and die. Like this, who we think we are, our ideas, our attachments, like I'm a Christian, I'm a wife, I'm a mom, you know, I'm all these things. These are all just like identity markers that I've attached myself to, like, so that my little shell can, you know, make its way through the world. So that's what all eventually had to die. You know, it was like, well, I'm not this. A mom is a role that I'm playing. A religion is, you know, this is a role, this is a language that I speak, you know, a video producer, that's a role kind of thing. So it's like, as I was like stripping all this off, it's like, what's left? You know, you get down to like nothing essentially, but your pure essence. And it's like, I think that that represents like the crucifixion process. It's like very psychologically intense to let all that go and let like the true self come forward, because that true self is going to like threaten or disrupt like the attachments that you have. Like there's very real risk to like bringing that forward. So anyway, yeah, I kind of like diagram that metaphor about the seed in the book as kind of a way to explain like what's happening psychologically and what's supposed to be happening like within religion, you know, like Paul, when he says like, at first I thought like a child and, you know, now I don't anymore. Like he was a grown man when he said that, like he didn't stop thinking like a child until his encounter with Christ on the road to Damascus. So I had always read that, like, I don't know, like he was like talking about us as 8-year-olds, you know, but now we're all grown up. And it's like, no, his conversion to away from this childlike thinking and maturation was like him as an adult, you know, like he had like firmly established his egoic life and, you know, the vehicle of his false self was like marching forward in this persecution of Christians. And he thinks he's doing it for God, you know? So I just found a lot of parallels in the story where it's like, oh, I think I'm doing all of this work for God. And really, I'm still in this little tiny false shell with a childlike mind. And so I think I realized like, I think all of this is about like the first half of life, forming this shell as a vehicle to like get us to a certain point. And at some point, all those tools and coping mechanisms that got us here stop working. And then that's really like the beginning of the spiritual life is when the shell can fall off. And ideally, like religion and Christianity could help shepherd through that process. But what I came to realize is I'm like, I don't think anyone here is aware of this process. So in my grief and growth, it felt like all of a sudden I was like a pariah in that environment. And I really like had to retreat.
I was going to ask what the response, like, I guess socially, yeah. And like in your, cause you mentioned you're pretty involved in a young adult ministry. Was that what you
mentioned?
So what was the response like, or maybe not response from others, but maybe your response to the atmosphere?
Yeah. So I think, sort of by nature, it's interesting. Like, I've come to find out like a lot of things that I felt like were very traumatic about growing up in the church. Like, you know, my husband grew up in a very similar environment and he just has a completely different personality than me. And things just didn't like penetrate him in the same way. Like he doesn't care what people think as much, you know, like, which I'm like, how do you do that? You know, like, yeah. You know, I'm just sort of naturally more sensitive to like everyone else's emotions and energies. And so that's been more part of my work, my personal work, is being able to be like, I know what I'm about to say is going to make you uncomfortable. And I'm not responsible for like your response to me. You know what I mean? But anyway, so what I kind of felt like I said, we were like in this mega church and it was surprising. Like there are definitely people who weren't, were not excited that I was like asking questions. And I suddenly felt a lot of fear being projected onto me, like people that I had like relationships with for years. All of a sudden I felt like there was like this barrier and they couldn't see me anymore, you know? So there was kind of that to contend with. But then there were also people who I realized were deconstructing or had like reformulated these kind of things that we had been working with like for years. And I was like, why didn't you tell me?
Dude. Okay. Yes. So like I was living. So when I first moved to where I live now, I was renting a room from a family and mm-hmm. they would let people rent rooms or whatever. And so one of the guys that was renting the room next to me, he's actually mm-hmm. helps me host the podcast sometimes. His name is Caleb, but mm-hmm. We've talked about this. So literally like we both were working in evangelical churches and whatnot. And, we finally had one day where we had just happened to have a conversation and we both brought up like something that we had questions about.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of this realization of like, wait a second, you deal with some of the questions that I do. And it's such a like it is very, for me, it was very like kind of relieving. It was like, okay, I am not the only one out here that's wrestling. But anyway, sorry to interrupt you, but that's just such a, like, it's such an interesting experience that it's like this, like, it's fearful for people and they have to like hide it to protect themselves. So it's just it's always interesting to me to hear that like people kind of have the similar experience of they meet somebody that is dealing with the same thing. And it's like, why didn't you say something? Or why didn't you bring it up? But
there's
good reason why people don't.
Yeah. Well, and I've come to like appreciate that. You know, like my personal like psychological experience like felt so intense that I did have like, it was almost like healthy, or I guess I needed to feel like I was all alone for a minute so that I could like make the choice with my own agency to be like, I'm not going to like sacrifice myself anymore to like appease other people, or like withhold who I am in order to like make an experience like less distressful for other people.
Yeah.
So I felt like looking back, I feel thankful that it felt like a matter of life or death for me, like in that moment where it was just like, I realized all like the self repression was like contributing to anxiety and panic and depression. And it's like, I got these three little kids like that I have to be okay for. And so that has to be the priority. So, and then at first, you know, like, especially with this like reorientation about hell, it's funny because like at first it was just kind of this naive, like, well, maybe people just don't know, like they just need to know it's not real. So at first it was like me, this kind of blurting out very bluntly, like, you know, I don't believe in that anymore, or I don't think it's what it is. And thinking like that, I was just going to like enlighten people and they were going to be like, oh, wow. But I kind of realized like, all right, this is a more like subtle, nuanced thing in conversations, you know, where you really have to be present. Kind of like you were saying, you know, and
people allude to it and we miss it.
Yes. And I noticed like, as I was kind of starting to wake up, there were certain people that I was like, oh, I think this person is on the same path as me, you know? And so I would kind of seek out those people like one-on-one, and that did eventually like create like more of a sense of safety to be like, okay, I'm not the only one who thinks this kind of thing. But also like over the years now, I've kind of come to understand like the wisdom of going back like to the seed in the shell and realizing like for me, it wasn't a matter of like, I don't want to change my beliefs, I don't want to evolve. It wasn't any of that. It was like my beliefs and my identity in this religion, like it's so tied that like if a Jenga block comes out, my life is going to fall apart. Like, and that literally is what happened, you know? And so there's like this recognition of like not pushing this on people, because a lot of times like those coping mechanisms are protecting them from something that they are not in a place to deal with yet. You know, I felt really lucky that I did have like this, I had a therapist for 15 years where there was like that resource where when I had a crisis, it was like, okay, we can deal with this. But there really was like this kind of going like, thank God, you know, like that was the case, because I don't know what would have happened. And so I am kind of aware now that it's like, I'm not surprised when people get, you know, bowed up and don't want to talk about it or feel very threatened, because I'm like, if someone's trying to yank the Jenga block out of the bottom of my tower and I've got all this at stake, you know, we've got income coming from a church, we've got kids, we've got blah, blah, blah. Like, I'm not interested in having a nervous breakdown when I have these people to take care of, you know? So there is kind of that awareness now where I see it more as like a human growth and development thing. And I think maybe what started out in the deconstruction community was like this sincere yearning for truth and remorse and lament over like what we had all been unaware of, and suddenly becoming aware of like everyone else's experiences and trying to like, you know, protect anyone from ever like having these experiences again. And what started out as like, I think, very sincere in some ways has kind of just become like this rage where it's like, we're just going to like either burn down what hurt us or like attempt to like yank everyone towards us. And I think that the piece that's missing that I'm trying to like fill in this book is like the human growth and development piece, where it's like, you know, everyone starts at ground zero. Like no one pops out of the womb as this like enlightened being, you know?
Yeah.
And kind of the rough stages are like, we go from like an egoic stage to like an ethnocentric stage, where, you know, egoic would be like, I'm concerned with me, myself, and I, you know, and that's a healthy, normal stage of development. Ethnocentric is like, I'm concerned with my group and the group's safety and the well-being of the group. And that is largely where a lot of like, you know, Christianity is right now. It's very tribal, but that is a stage of development. And then we move to like a more global awareness, where it's like, oh, all the religions are feeling the same way as that, you know, like all the groups are having the same experiences as us. And we become aware of that. And kind of, I think, you know, a lot of us who are like kind of coming out of these environments are in that spot. And sort of the shadow part of that, that stage of the development is realizing like the human growth and development piece is, it's like, we can't just like berate everyone, you know, or get rid of the people who aren't there yet. It's like, how do we foster like this growth, you know, and just realizing like the wisdom in the different stages, and that, you know, this seed can't germinate until like it's in the perfect environment for it to be able to like, you know, let go of the shell and grow into a tree. So
I think that, you know, what I've tried to do as well with, you know, the podcast is just giving people hopefully a balanced approach in some ways, and giving that, like, I think somebody commented on an Instagram post or something, and they called what I hope is what I'm trying to do is like a cautious deconstruction. And what I mean by that is just like, you don't have to like destroy everything at one time, or you don't have to like, you know, just be so, you know, destructive towards what you're used to be involved in. So I definitely would agree with you. There is a need for this, like kind of this, there's a gap of like, well, what am I supposed to do now? Or what do I do with these questions? Or what do I do with this like space and time that I'm in where I'm transitioning towards something? And I don't know what that something is, but I know I don't want to give up on my spiritual experience. And so I think that, you know, I think a lot of people resonate with what you're mentioning. You have a, you know, the first chapter that I found really interesting was the Christian of the future. So what is that chapter? Like, what is that about? I want to hear kind of your thinking on that.
Yeah. So I start the chapter off, with a quote, by a man named Karl Rahner, who basically says like the Christian of the future will be a mystic, which is one who's experienced God for real, or they'll not exist at all. And so I think basically how I go on to define mystic is someone who loves everything and everyone because they see Jesus in everything and everyone. And there's a bit of like this parsing out of what do we mean when we say Jesus versus what do we mean when we say Christ? And Christ is like the animating spirit of everything, you know, like Christ is all in all. And so I kind of give some examples about how, the story that I use is like in St. Francis of Assisi, how I really related to him, like as like a religious person, you know, he had status in his society, and he was like, he really like just detested lepers or was grossed out by him or whatever. It was just like, you know, I'll avoid you. Thank you very much. You know? And he has this encounter with this leper. You know, he comes upon him when he's like riding his horse, and the leper is like asking for charity. And he says, you know, like, what had always disgusted me, like I was suddenly like filled with compassion. And so he like hops off his horse and like embraces this man and kisses him on the lips. And he's like literally like kissing what like disgusts him the most. And then he like gets back on his horse and looks around, and the leper is gone. And he says, like, I came to understand that it was Jesus Christ himself that I had kissed. And that exactly paralleled like my experience with the transgender woman on my porch, where it was like this, the first impression was like this, you know, kind of like recoiling from the situation. Like, I don't want to be vulnerable with this person because, you know, I've been conditioned to think all these things about, you know, people who don't look a certain way or conform or whatever. And suddenly realizing like that it was Christ, you know, and that just like blew everything open for me. So I think that the pattern is to first see Christ like in somebody else, in the other, in some way. And so, you know, for Christians, it's like we see Christ in Jesus. We recognize it there. And then for the mystic, it shifts into seeing that spirit in quote, the other, somewhere where we're not expecting to see it, you know, like, oh, I thought it was this one singular being who lived for 33 years that was divine and nothing else. And all of a sudden you see divinity in something that you're not expecting. And that is very ordinary and very human, you know? So throughout the book, I kind of note some of these parallel experiences, like Jacob having this experience, like in the rock, like encountering Christ. And then he like anoints the rock and it's like, this is the place God resides. You know, like, what does that mean? Like, that sounds ridiculous for me to pick up an object and be like, God is in this acorn, you know, or God is in this rock. But that's what he says. And like, what he means is like, the spirit of Christ was revealed to me through this unexpected object, you know, and we see it again, like with Moses in the burning bush, like something that's just a background part of our life that we're not paying attention to is suddenly like ablaze. Okay. And you're like, all right, there it is. So you have that experience. And then what was mirrored back to me was the Imago Dei in myself, where I'm going, you know, through my psychological work, I'm like, this embryo, this true self has been with me since the beginning, like since the womb, before I accepted Jesus into my heart, like this Christ in the tomb was in me, kind of dormant, you know? So it wasn't a matter of like me inviting Jesus into my heart. It was, I think that this has been with me the whole time, and now I'm awakening to it. So it's like, we see it in like a deity, like Jesus, we see it in the other where it's unexpected. Then we see it in ourselves. And then it's just obvious from there. I'm like, oh, I think that this embryo is in everybody. So suddenly it's like, I'm seeing Jesus quite literally, like in every person that I'm dealing with, you know, and I'm trying to speak to that divine little cell that exists within that person. And then from there, you kind of realize like, oh, we're all made of like the same primordial substance, you know? And suddenly, like, as you begin to like come into this awareness, quiet your understanding, it's like, God, just being in nature, like, I feel like it's like vibrating with Christ, you know? So St. Francis like goes on to, he'd call like, it was like Brother Moon and Sister Stars, and he would like preach to the squirrels, you know, which sounds crazy, but it's like these animals were like responding to his energy and essence, you know, because he was speaking to that. So like you have this awareness that like, oh, all of creation is like vibrating with this spirit or whatever you want to call it, called Christ. And that you realize is made like completely transparent in Jesus. So it's like, it doesn't, seeing things that way, like doesn't diminish Jesus at all. It's like, no, it's more so, you know, like I see it so clearly in you. So I love you. And that is like animating beyond and into everything else. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me of some of the stuff that Richard Rohr talks about.
Yes.
The
I
universal
love him.
Christ. So yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I know some of my listeners are pretty familiar with his work. So it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I've heard it approached in different ways. And honestly, it was something that I had not really thought about. You know, for me, it was like almost in a way, because I grew up in church, you just kind of have like Jesus Christ, that attachment on the end of it. And so, you know, it wasn't until I began to read, you know, stuff from people that are mystics and things mm-hmm. like that, that they began to look at it in a very different way. And that was pretty early on with many of the church fathers of the way, and at least those that were in tune with mystic Christianity. So
yeah. In the Universal Christ, Rohr has, I think it's like the first chapter, but it's called like Christ is not Jesus's last name.
Yeah, I started reading that. Yeah, I was reading that. And I think I went into reading that book not realizing what I was going to be reading. And I wasn't as, I guess, aware of the different pockets of like where people have gone within their faith. So I was still kind of pigeonholed into like evangelical Christianity when I began to read that. And I was like, what is this guy talking about?
Yeah.
So, yeah, he definitely is one of the probably the more popular ones that presents that idea.
Mm-hmm.
But so, with the title of your book, I'm really intrigued by, you know, returning to Eden, because mm-hmm. something that I talk about when I teach, and I always wonder if people are like, what is this going to talk about? Is I tell people that the story of the scriptures is all about getting back to Eden. And that mm-hmm. that's kind of like the way I view it. It's like you and I think a resource that does a really good job of this, and you know, they have a particular way they're viewing Christianity, but they talk about Eden quite a bit if you listen to their videos, is the Bible Project.
Okay.
And so they mention Eden a lot, and they really key in on that. So for you, when you titled the book Returning to Eden, what was the thinking on that?
Yeah. Well, so I as I have already mentioned, I was, for me, like my, you know, when I had this breakdown and, you know, started having like these illuminations, it was like going all the way back to the beginning. Like, I feel like I need to heal from like in the womb, you know? And so as I was doing this my own work internally, I just started like recognizing the parallels in the stories where I was like, I think that this, like that these stories, maybe I started thinking about like Adam and Eve first. I was like, I don't think that this is about real people. Like, I think that this is like a profound, like psychological and spiritual allegory that I'm now like having all these connections to. So, there's a guy that I reference in the book, several times, named Joseph Campbell. And he says like, you know, the spiritual life is about finding the face you had before you were born, like your essence before anyone like gave you your labels. And so, yeah, it was about like returning to the beginning, which obviously like maps, you know, into Eden, but then seeing like just the parallels for like the human experience and human development and like, you know, coming into the garden and like this unit of consciousness, like an infant. It's like an infant quite literally feels like at one with its mother. Like there's no awareness of distinction, that it's not its mother, you know, like you're literally like attached through an umbilical cord where it's like, we're not really sure where your body begins and my body starts. And it's like, we're kind of this one unit here. And so it's like a picture of the garden where like, you know, the seed attached to the tree, it's like literally getting its body from the source. And then as we grow, you know, and fall from the tree corresponds to like pushing off from the parent, you know, like I am a separate self. I do have to take my own journey. And so like, you know, Eve eating the tree represents like this feminine life force within us. And I'm not talking about like, a, you know, an actual woman, but I'm talking about like the creative wisdom, spirit thrust to life, which is like the will to live, is like corresponds to like this feminine spirit, which is personified by Eve. And it says, you know, that that was taken out of Adam. So it's like the Adam represents like the masculine mind, which wants to like label and put everything in its order. And this all has its proper place, but like separated from like your own vitality and your creative life force, you basically just end up robotic, or quote in sin, which, you know, the Greek word for that hamartia means to miss the mark. It's basically just means like you're not in alignment with your true self. There's like a disconnect there. So that's like the state of the seed falling from the tree. So there's kind of like this retelling of the story, you know, and then we see Adam, the mind, who like starts to label everything like, this is good, this is bad, you know, sin bad, you know, this other stuff good or whatever. But just kind of showing how that's all necessary. But as long as we're like stuck in this like dualistic thinking of like, you know, all the Christians are going to heaven, everyone else is going to hell, like just this labeling that has no awareness of like human development or like the nature of how things unfold, like we have to put that back together. So like the masculine and the feminine coming back together, is what like consummates like the inner marriage between like spirit and flesh and the two becoming one flesh again, which can then give birth to like Christ in you, or that awakening of like your authentic self, where you basically like bring your authentic spirit into the ordinary world and you, sounds very heretical, but like you become a Christ, you know, it's not just about like worshiping Christ. It's like you live out your own incarnation, which is Christ in you.
Yeah. And, you know, I think it's interesting because when you read the, for instance, like the writings of Paul, he talks about becoming a new creation.
Mm-hmm.
Now a new creation, or what you mentioned earlier, there's a lot of references to, even Jesus says this, is the idea of death to self.
Yeah.
And so, you know, these things are not as, you know, I guess foreign as it may seem to some people that maybe have never heard of this kind of thinking upon, you know, mystic Christianity. So, you know, when you say it sounds heretical, but there are definitely passages of scripture that I think refer to some of the stuff that you're speaking to. So
yeah, it sounds heretical when it's like dropped out of context, which is kind of the wisdom I came to, where it's like I can't just go around like just like dropping these bombs, you know, out of context. So I was like, well, I'm gonna explain it in a book, you know.
There you go.
So I'll take you from like A to Z to get there.
Yeah. And, you know, I've looked through, you know, I've been able to read through some of the chapters, and it's really interesting. You know, the anatomy of the seed, she literally has a picture of a seed that you can look at in the book. So it's really good stuff. So for our listeners, do you have a place where they can go and kind of purchase the book, and will it be on Amazon or your website?
Yes.
Or where can they find also some more of your work?
Yeah. So yes, the book will be on Amazon, Returning to Eden by Heather Hamilton. That comes out February 22nd. You can go to my website, which is just returningtoeden.com. On Instagram, it's Heather Hamilton One, and on Facebook, Heather Hamilton Author is what you can search for. But yeah, on my website, I have some blogs where, you know, I've written, it was like I wrote through some of like my deconstruction and theological thoughts. I would say that where I end up going and come to in the book has not been published anywhere. It was kind of so comprehensive that I was like, this is a book, not something that I can just like dribble out in blog posts.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I would just go straight for the book.
Yeah, I would as well. And, you know, I encourage you to go check it out, order it, give it, like, read it. And like, if you find yourself at a place where you're like, okay, I don't know, pause, You know, mm-hmm. I think that sometimes it's very easy to, like, when we approach new ideas or concepts, it's easy to try and rush to an answer or rush to a resolution. And I think that, you know, something I mentioned before we started the interview was the idea of, like, church and spiritual community should be about the spiritual experience and not just like, here's your answer. Have fun. Good luck to you. And so I think that this book does a very good job of, like, giving a good overview of, you know, your journey, and then as well as some of the thinking of people that have come before us in this mm-hmm. kind of thinking. And so I'm excited for our listeners to get to check it out. So Google it, look it up, order it. You said February 22nd?
Yeah.
Awesome. Heather, thank you so much for coming on today's episode. I'll post a link to all the places they can find your work and your Instagram and all those things in the listen notes and in the YouTube description and all that. So again, thank you so much for coming on.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, Blake.
Thanks for listening to Rethinking Christianity. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from Rethinking Christianity, you can follow us on Instagram at Rethinking Christianity Podcast, as well as on YouTube and Facebook. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.